live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with the Josh Gordon news. You probably heard this. He tweeted a statement this morning. That's how this story broke. He tweeted a statement this morning, and the statement read, quote, "I take my mental health very seriously at this point to ensure I remain able to perform at the highest level. I've recently felt that I could have a better grasp on things mentally. With that said, I will be stepping away from the football field for a bit to focus on my mental health. I would like to thank Coach Belichick, Mr. Kraft, as well as countless others within the Patriots organization for their continued support. I want to thank my fans for their support as well as I continue down the path to getting back to 100%. End quote. So when that tweet came down, it felt like a positive step. A preemptive and preventative measure that Gordon was taking to take care of his health and to prioritize his mental health above his career. That's how that felt. And then NFL Network reporter Tom Pelissero tweeted, quote, "Patriots wide receiver Josh Gordon is facing another indefinite suspension for violating terms of his reinstatement under the substance abuse policy, per source. He announced today he's stepping away to address his mental health." So this is where we are in the moment. Either he's stepping away voluntarily, or he's on the verge of being suspended indefinitely. Either way, if your first reaction is to wonder what this means for the Patriots' playoff chances, or even worse, for your fantasy team or some money you laid down, check yourself. Because this is not about Josh Gordon, the football player. It's about Josh Gordon, the human. Now, if your reaction to this news is the Patriots have just lost two games in December and now they've lost their most dangerous receiver, you can stop right there too. If your reaction is the receiver most likely to get separation is now separated from the team, then I'm not interested. Yes, the Patriots knew the risks when they brought him in. They took a chance that their system, their way could help him. They knew it was possible, if not likely, that something like this might happen. And it did. But to me, it was worth the risk. Because when this guy's healthy, mentally and physically, he is special. But don't take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. This is what Jarvis Landry said about him on this show back in the summer. What stands out to you the most about Josh Gordon?
Man, really just the size that he has and his ability to be able to get in and out of cuts. That's one of the most impressive things that I've recognized and noticed about him. You know, the more that he continues to hone in on that and grow as far as in route running, man, listen, kid's unstoppable.
Quote, "The kid's unstoppable." He's unstoppable. That's coming from one of the most unstoppable receivers in the NFL, a guy who's been breaking records virtually since he entered the league, and he's looking at Josh Gordon saying, "The guy's unstoppable." You see, that's how good Josh Gordon was, how good Josh Gordon could still be. And it's probably all in the past right now, because if, in fact, he did violate the terms of his reinstatement, and it sounds like it could mean something that he tested positive for, it's hard to see him finding a way back to the NFL. Not after all the time he has already missed because of previous positive tests. Now, I don't know what Gordon is dealing with that would require him to step away or violate the terms of that reinstatement. I don't know what he might have tested positive for, if, in fact, that did happen. I just know I'm not going to make any assumptions about what that might be. Remember, he told GQ about how he would self-medicate with, quote, Xanax, with marijuana, codeine, to help numb those nerves so you can function every day. That became the norm from middle school to high school. So by the time I got into my 20s, I was on an accelerated pace, end quote. So what I'm getting at is this. If you want to come in here to make jokes about pot, keep moving. I'm not interested. Number one, tree humor is pretty tired. It's played out. I mean, if you still crack up when the clock goes from 419 to 420, it's time to move on. Society's relationship with marijuana has changed dramatically over the years. It is more and more accepted. Laws are changing. Rules are being relaxed. You can buy it or derivatives of it in just about any form you'd like in a store right down the street from many of you. And yet at the same time, hundreds of thousands of individuals have spent time in prison for having small amounts of it. So if Gordon tested positive for marijuana, it's serious. It's not something you want to make jokes about. It's not something you should make jokes about regarding Fritos and Funyuns and the Munchies. Again, these jokes stopped being funny a long time ago. Because by all accounts, Gordon has put in the work trying to address this, whether you want to classify it as a mental health issue or an addiction issue or both. It's a serious issue, and it's one that he's put time in on, and yet it's still an issue. I severely doubt the idea that some of you have that Josh Gordon just decided that he likes drugs more than football, or he picked pot over football. The equation is not that simple when you're dealing with chemicals, your brain, and your emotions. I'm like, how many of you deal with mental health and addiction issues? I'm guessing a lot more than you let on. So the first question here is about Josh Gordon, the person, and the issues that he is facing, that he is battling. And then the second question is whether or not the league's rules do need to change. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is against the league rules. Josh Gordon should not have been doing it if that's what he was doing. He knows the rules. He knows them well. If he violated those rules and he tested positive for a banned substance, that's on him, not the league. But there is a larger question of how society's relationship to marijuana has changed over the years. But the league's public relationship to marijuana has not changed much at all. Once again, we do not know what he reportedly tested positive for, and it would be reckless to speculate, but I think we'd all agree that if it was marijuana, that feels very different than if it was a harder drug or a drug designed to enhance performance. And maybe that's something the league does need to look into. Yes, there is a good chance that this is the end of a career that could have been so good, but hopefully it's the start of a life that could also be so good. Because as good as Josh Gordon was in football, it seems like Josh Gordon and football were not a great mix. Maybe Josh Gordon, without football, will be able to get healthy and live the life that he'd like to live. I hope so. And I hope he gets help he needs. Rick Barnes is my guest. Rick, nice to have you on the show. As always, good to have you. How are you?
Good, Jim. How you been?
Good, Rick. Nice to visit with you. Thanks for doing this. Let me start right here. You're coming off a win over Samford, which featured 24 points and 11 assists from Jordan Bone. I ask you about him because on Tuesday, you spent some time with him after practice. You went over film. You encouraged him. What was your message to him? And then what did you make of the way he showed up on the court last night?
Well, he was terrific last night. And what we talked about was him understanding where he needed to attack space on the floor, where he's most effective, and what he can do to make the game easier for his teammates. And really, a lot of what we've got to do is continue to get back to being the defensive team we were a year ago. We're not there. And so much of it starts with him because of he's involved in so many ball screen situations. And we talked a lot about that. And him being alert, he's very quick, very fast. He can do a lot away from the ball, too. And he has gotten better there. But the biggest thing was the offensive end, really talking to him about attacking certain areas of the court where he can be most effective.
You know, Rick, one of the things also that struck me about last night's game was Grant Williams, who is a special player for you. He was on the bench in foul trouble, and then you go on a 16-0 run without him. When you look at that fact and the fact that you're playing without a couple of other key guys, what's it say about the depth of this year's team?
Well, you know, we came in today and scrubbed out the tape from last night, and one thing we pointed out is that, you know, we've got probably six or seven guys that has they've either gone over 20 or can go over 20 points. And so we don't want to be a – you know, and Grant does a lot. You know, we play through him, but Admiral has been terrific over the last couple weeks. But we've got balance, and we're best when we have balance. When we play really well, Jim, we're going to end up, you know, really having somewhere around 20, 21, 22 assists a game, and that's when we play our best. But, again, you mentioned it. Grant has a lot to do for us, but he's gotten himself in foul trouble the last couple games. Different guys have had to step up and take up that slack.
Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes joining us here in the jungle. You know, Rick, last year you guys were picked to finish near the bottom of the SEC. Instead, you win the regular season title. As you look back on that year, how huge was it for the growth of the program and what you're building there?
You know, it was big. And we go back to where we really felt we thought we had to really instill in these guys that they knew that they could get this done at this level. and it was back in the Bahamas a year ago when we were in the tournament, and our first game was against Purdue that we were able to win because we have so much respect for Purdue and their program and the kind of team they had, and we were able to win that game. Then we came back and played really a good game against Villanova, but Villanova taught us a lesson in the fact that if you don't play 40 minutes, you're not going to play at the highest level. You're not going to win at the highest level. And then we carried that over, but that coming out of that tournament gave us a great deal of confidence, and we kept moving through the conference. And you know, the league here is, the SEC is really, really competitive league. It's better this year, I think, from top to bottom. And now we've gone into this year, and the schedule that we played, it's prepared us a lot for what we're getting ready to face in the SEC.
Yeah, I would imagine also, Rick, the thing that might be different this year, maybe you surprised some people outside of the program last year, but you're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. How have you gone about preparing your guys so that they understand you're going to get everybody's best shot every single night and that they've got to dig deep and find a new level, another level?
Well, and you're right, because the great teams embrace it. They wear that kind of almost like a badge of honor when you get ranked, and people, you know, you got a number in front of you, it becomes a red letter game for everybody else. But the one thing that did help us a year ago, from really the beginning of February on, we were the highest ranked team in the SEC. And so coming down the stretch, every game we played was a resume builder for not only ourselves, but for someone else. And we finished, I think, 11-2 coming down the stretch. And so we dealt with it a little bit a year ago, but you mentioned it's a whole different level this year in the fact that there was so much talk about us in the off season, which this group had never heard any of that. And what we talk about is, can we get better today? Can we just worry about ourselves, knowing that we want to embrace the fact that we're going to have to be ready to play every night, because it will make us better if we learn to stay on edge and understand that everybody's going to come at you with everything they have.
Tennessee, number 3 nationally. We're joined by their head coach, Rick Barnes. Of course, Rick, you had a little bit of drama on Saturday night. You beat Memphis 102-92, but there was some extracurricular activity, and especially in the days that followed. Memphis head coach Penny Hardaway had some colorful comments, including, quote, "Rick Barnes, get the bleep out of here." Now, Rick, you've been around this game a long, long time. How do you go about making sure that you and the players do not get caught up in that drama and you make sure that you get back to work and worry about the next opponent?
Just what you just said. You know, again, I don't even know how the drama came about, to be quite honest with you. But the fact is, we had told the team that, hey, that's over and done with. We've got a really good Samford team coming in here that we had a lot of respect for. And we knew that going to Phoenix, playing Gonzaga, then going to Memphis, playing Memphis, and then, you know, getting ready for this game. And our guys, I give them a lot of credit because, you know, we have a process we go through, and we wanted to make sure we came back. But for 2 days, we really worked on the things that we needed to work on and continue to work on to help us get better, because we talk about our defense. We're not as good defensively right now as we were a year ago, and we got to get back to that. And we've been talking about working on it. But that's exactly what we did. We said that game is over, done with, and now we got to get ready for a really good Samford team. And our guys really went about business. We were down again. John Fulkerson didn't get to play last night. We had to play with a shorter bench, and for the most part, you know, we were able to work through that.
You know, Rick, you've hit on that a couple of times, that defensively you got to find a new level. You know, there's a certain mentality, though, right? Like, for instance, you built a monster at Texas, and there were some great games between you and Bill Self at Kansas before you met up this year. He said that he felt like this team that you have reminded him of some of your really good Clemson teams. Self said, quote, "I remember watching them from afar and thinking, this team does not take any crap from anybody," end of quote. And then he went on to say that this team has more talent than those teams, but he loves the toughness and attitude of the team. So what do you make of the toughness of this group?
Well, I think we're really physical. And, you know, I think any coach, I mean, I appreciate the toughness and the fact that we've got a group of guys, not all of them work at the same level, that are really committed to working hard at this game and working at their individual game. And you know, it takes toughness. I think a work ethic is a talent. I don't think most guys come into college understanding how hard you have to work to be really special and separate yourself. And so we've got a group of guys, and it started 4 years ago with Admiral Schofield, Kyle Alexander, and Lamonte Turner were the scholarship players that really bought into how hard we need to work. And the lone senior we had that did that was Kevin Punter. And I think that's where the toughness starts. It starts, you know, when you're Not when you're on underneath those bright lights. It starts back in Pratt Pavilion where they work out every day and they put time into it. They know they want to get better. And we've got a core group of guys that really do that, Jim, where they're in there working on their game. Like today, you know, we got to play Saturday early, so we had to get our legs back under us today. But we still have guys coming in today that continue to work individually. And that's where I think the toughness starts from. And it's an everyday process that you go through. It's a mentality. It's a DNA that you want to really build in, but it takes the players buying into to putting the time into it.
You see, that's really interesting to me, Rick. So, like, if work ethic is a talent, when I think talent, I think talent is innate. But is it innate, or can you take a kid who really is not used to working and teach him how to work?
I think you can. I think most kids, I find, they don't understand what really work is. They mistake activity for achievement, but in terms of understanding what real intense hard work is and how hard you've got to go to really separate yourself if you want to be special. And there's no secrets to it. There really isn't. And you go back, and I can tell you the best players that we have ever coached, we didn't have some kind of magic dust that we sprinkled on them. We didn't. Those guys came in the gym. We told them what we had learned being around. You know, I can go back to, you know, my days at Providence, my days at Clemson, and at Texas, players like, I tell people to this day, Kevin Durant is, if he's not the hardest, certainly one of the hardest we've ever coached. That, I mean, you talk about a person that's committed to being a great player and the time and effort you put into it. And then it baffles you when you get guys that aren't nearly as talented that don't want to put in that kind of time. And that's why there's only so few of them that really make it to the highest level.
So, Rick, what about, for instance, T.J. Ford? I've talked to you in the past about T.J. Ford. He talks about what you've meant to him. What was he like when you had him? Did you have to coach him hard, or was he already self-motivated and a self-starter?
You know, I think we've always had to coach guys hard in particular, and I think our guys would tell you that we coach them all pretty much the same in terms of, you know, we have a standard. But T.J. taught me a lot, too, you know, in terms of the way he saw the game, Jim. He was a guy that people don't and I actually had it when I was having my talk with Jordan Bone the other day. I pulled up TJ's stats and showed him where TJ Ford in high school averaged 9 points a game. His team, I think, won 77. In college, his first year, he averaged 9 points. The most points he averaged was the year we went to the Final Four, and I think he averaged a little bit over 14 because we told him he had to start scoring a little bit more. But he was a guy that understood every guy on his team. He knew how to make them better, and that was his sole position. And he also taught me a lot about a player-coach relationship. You know, everybody talks about player-coach relationship. And when you coach guys hard, and which we do, you know, the one thing that I don't want to do, I don't want guys not looking forward to coming back to practice the next day. But TJ said to me one day, he said, "Coach, you and I are going to have a great relationship because I don't care how hard you coach me, I'm going to make you love me too." And after every practice, he'd come over. During a game, we'd come over, and he was the only player I ever coached. And he would say, "Coach, what are you thinking right now?" And I'd say, "Well, here's what I'm thinking. What are you thinking?" And I'll give you a great example of T.J. Ford and what made him a great player. We're playing at Oklahoma, the year that we both end up with a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Senior night, the place is going nuts. We're down. I took Brian Boddicker out of the game and told him I wasn't going to play him anymore. I said, "You gave up 2 offensive rebounds." I said, "Just go to the end of the bench and sit there." That was pretty much the gist of the timeout. We break that timeout. We walk back towards the bench, and TJ grabs me and said, "Coach, what are you thinking right now?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Do you want to win?" I said, "Yeah, I want to win." He said, "Well, you got to put Brian Boddicker back in the game."
Wow.
I said, TJ, you heard me tell him he's not going back in the game. He said, "Well, Coach, you don't want to win then." And so, I kid you not, he walked away from me. I walked to the end of the bench, and I said, "Brian, I'm going to give you one more chance." He goes back in the game, and in 45 seconds, he hit 2 3-point shots. And we go from being down 9 to winning the game. And when we're walking off the floor, someone came up behind me and hit me so hard. It's one of those things where you get stunned and you turn around like, "What just hit me?" And I looked at TJ and said, "You a heck of a coach."
Wow.
That was T.J. Ford. I mean, he was not afraid to tell me, "Hey, you don't want to win if you don't want to put Brian Boddicker back in the game." And so I learned to listen to players that are willing to talk to you, and because they do have a feel. And I can go with Kevin Durant. You know, Kevin was a guy that we had to beg him at times, "Man, you got to take this game over." And towards the end of, you know, his first year with us, when he was the best player in college basketball, he knew when it was time to do that. But I think coaches can learn from players, but I still think, you ask about TJ, he was a guy that loved to play. He didn't particularly like to work out per se in the gym. He just wanted to be in the gym and play all day long. And between his freshman and sophomore year, that's when he really started knowing he had to work on his jump shot. He had to get better shooting the ball. And he really did become what I think is the consummate pro in terms of understanding that you've got to get better.
Rick Barnes, my guest. Rick, really quick follow that point you made about Kevin Durant. Why did you have to beg him to take over games? Was he that unselfish? Did he lack confidence early on? Why did you have to push him to take over?
Such a great teammate. You know, his idea was it's a team game, and he's like that today. But, you know, when Kevin came in, we lost P.J. Tucker. I mean, think about this. If it wasn't for the early draft, P.J. Tucker, Boobie Gibson, LaMarcus Aldridge would have been on that team with Kevin Durant, D.J. Augustine, Damian James, and that crew of guys. But when we came in, we had developed this great work ethic at Texas where Roy L. Ivey, James Thomas, T.J., all those guys, Brandon Mouton had developed for us. So all at once, we lose all these guys, and we got four scholarship players left in the program the year Kevin came in. And we were concerned more than anything that we're going to have to totally rebuild that culture. Little did we know that we had just signed a guy who I knew was going to be the best player in college basketball, but you had no idea his commitment to being in the gym and how he got Damian James, DJ Augustine, all those other guys to come in the gym with him. And so not only did we not lose our culture, it really kind of went to another level. But Kevin was so unselfish that he was a guy that when I told him he was going to be the first freshman to ever go to a Big 12 media day, because, again, we had four guys back, and the only guy that played was A.J. Abrams, who almost went every year because of guys leaving. And Kevin said to me, I don't want to go if the whole team's not going. And I said, well, that's not how this works. But he was such a team-oriented guy and one of the great teammates. If you watch him today, I still think he's one of those guys, and good things are happening to him. He's always deferring to his teammates.
Tennessee, 9-1, number 3 in the AP poll, and they're at home against Wake Forest on Saturday. Their head coach, Rick Barnes, my guest. Rick, so good to get caught up. Really appreciate that conversation, especially today. Nice to have you, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Merry Christmas.
Dino Babers joins us. Dino, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, what's the weather like back there in sunny Southern California?
Well, my man, it's great outside. Freezing inside this studio for some reason. But outside, we're great, Dino. How about Syracuse?
I'll tell you what, it's 54. There's no snow on the ground. That's suntanning weather right there, brother.
That's a good day right there. That's a great day. Dino Babers, my guest. All right, so a really busy time of year for you. There's a ton you and I could talk about, but let me start right here. A commitment ceremony during early signing day. Cooper Dawson is an offensive lineman from South Carolina. He did a ceremony with his friend, Kingsley Feynman, who has cerebral palsy. The two of them were at a table together in front of the media. Cooper whispers to Kingsley that where he was going to go. Kingsley then makes the announcement, Dino. What did you make of the announcement, and what does that tell you about Cooper as a person?
You know, Cooper came up on his visit, official visit, with his mom and dad, and they truly, truly impressed the heck out of me. And he was already a good player, but when you have a good player that has the qualities that Cooper has, along with the upbringing that his mom and dad put down on him, I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for when you're looking for student athletes that's not only going to represent your university well on the football field, but they're going to represent your university well off. And, you know, it did not surprise me, although I had never seen it done before, which is probably the reason why it was trending. But I thought it was special. I thought it was really cool, Jim.
No, it was really cool, and that's why I want to start with that. Dino Babers is my guest. A really, really cool moment. You know, the two conference losses you had this year were on the road at Clemson and at Pitt, and they were combined for a total of 11 points. As big of a step as you've taken this year, and it's been a big step, how close do you feel like you're taking to an even bigger step in the future?
You know what? It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think we're building the foundation the right way, and there's no doubt we took major, major steps this year to win plus five games, and I think there's only like two teams in the entire country that did it with us. I mean, it's a big deal. To go down, we had three losses, but two of our losses went to the start of the fourth quarter. We're ahead in both of those games. We're ahead in the Pitt game. We're ahead in the Clemson game. If we can score one more touchdown or get one more stop, we're probably playing in the Final Four, with one loss on our record from Notre Dame. Notre Dame flat beat us. They got after us really well. So, I mean, it's amazing what the season could have been, but you can't look at it like that on football. We had a couple overtime wins that were close, a couple of close wins, and if we lost those, it could be an entirely different season. So you are what you are. You are what your season says you are. And we're 9-3 with an opportunity to go double-digit in college football at a non-traditional power, which is normally very, very tough to do.
That is. And I want to get to that in 1 minute. But also, you've got a shot at going to a bowl game. And, in fact, you are. You're going to a bowl game for the first time since 2013 for Syracuse. What does that milestone in and of itself mean to you?
That's big. And that goes to the seniors. I mean, the 2018 class, I'm so proud of them. You're talking about young men that have been in college 3 and 4 years and who have never been to a bowl game. And I watch this. They've been in college 3 or 4 years and they've never been a part of a winning season.
Hmm.
And I was lucky enough to play at a college where even with my redshirt year, I never played on a losing team. And yet these guys had never played on a winning team until this year. So I can't say enough about the 2018 seniors and everything they've committed, not only on the football field, but the leadership off the football field. And they're going to be the launching pad to what's going to be happening here in the 2019 season.
We're talking to Syracuse head football coach Dino Babers. You know, back to that point about double-digit wins, it's not just that bowl game. You've got a chance to reach 10 wins, and that'd be the first time since 2001. You know, you've worked your way up the hard way. As you've said, you have not been at USC, Ohio State, or Alabama. So how special would it be to win 10 games this season with Syracuse?
Oh, it would be extremely special. It would be rewarding. And, again, and it's something for the community, something for the administration, something for the seniors and the football team. And, you know, something they can tell their grandkids about, that they can come back and look up on the wall and say, hey, we were part of this team that relaunched this thing. They made football important again at a school that traditionally, back in the past, was very, very dominant and very, very strong in football with the Jim Browns, the Ernie Davises, the Floyd Littles, the Larry Zonkas. You know, I mean, all those people, all those important names that were kind of the trendsetters back in the late 50s and early 60s.
You know, Dino, when you started the conversation today, you said to me, what's the weather like there? And then you gave me an update on what it's like there. Now, you and I have talked about this before, but before you arrived, there were all these reasons as to why football was not supposed to be successful at Syracuse. It was too cold. It's a basketball school. You don't have the facilities you need. One aspect that has epitomized your approach and the approach of the administration since you've been there is, yes, so what? So what? Let's do this anyway. So do you ignore the arguments that people try to make, or do you tackle them head on and then show why they're wrong?
You know, I don't like people to tell me what I can do.
Sure. Right.
You know, I'll let you do it, but then it just makes me, what do you mean I can't do it? Don't tell me what I can't do. You know, but I this place was ripe though. And you know, they hadn't won in a long time and they had a tradition of winning in the past. So it was just a matter of us showing them what we could do. And you know, it's kind of like League of Their Own. I forgot the movie. Build It and They'll Come. Oh my God, I forgot my movie.
That's Field of Dreams, Dino.
Field of Dreams. Thank you, Jim. Thank you for throwing me that olive branch. A Field of Dreams. If you build it, they'll come. You know, the thing that I'm excited about is our last two home games in the dome. We're the only NC2A Division I school with a dome, just like NFL. Our last two games, we were playing opponents that didn't have winning records, and we had the two largest crowds in the last 3 years. So the community and the student body has bought in, and the dome is the loud house, and they've got it rocking and rolling. And if we can fill that thing up, and we can really, really affect how that football team plays and really gives this school a huge home field advantage.
All right, so clearly you built this thing, and now they're coming. And then how does that translate when you hit the recruiting trail? For instance, when you go out to recruit right now, how different is the reaction when you talk about Syracuse football as opposed to when you first got there?
Well, one thing that happened right now is on the road is totally different. People recognize you. They recognize the S. They're excited. It was a lot easier to hold our recruits. Normally, when it gets down to the tail end, everybody wants to pick off some of your top recruits, so to speak, on your tree, on your branch. And that didn't happen this year. They tried to do some picking, and our guys were staying strong with us because they can see that the future's bright and they're excited about some of the things that we're doing here, Jim.
We're talking to Dino Babers for a few more moments. Dino, you mentioned Notre Dame, and you're kind of in an interesting spot in that you face Clemson and Notre Dame this season. You gave Clemson all they could handle in their house, and things did not go quite as well against Notre Dame. But based on your experience against them, how do you see that matchup going?
You know, it's going to be better than what people think it is. I think Ian Book, is he's got a certain it about him, the quarterback from Notre Dame. And he's a little bit more elusive than what people think. You just think you can line up and one of those first-round draft picks from Clemson is going to hit him right in the mouth, and that's going to be it. But that guy's got some stuff to him. He's got some moxie. It's going to be a really, really interesting contest. I thought that we caught – first of all, we know Clemson. We know them very well, and they know us. And we caught the Lawrence kid on his first game as a starter, and we actually knocked him out of the game. So we played half the game versus with their backup. Where the Notre Dame game, they played the entire game with their quarterback, and they knocked our quarterback out of the game in the first quarter of the game. So it kind of affected both the scores. But I think it's going to be an excellent contest. I think there's two excellent football teams. And I think it's going to really be a pick 'em. There's no doubt that Clemson has the most superheroes. They got the most number one draft picks between the two teams. But, again, I really believe that Notre Dame is a good team. And this isn't like basketball. You got to play with about 33 cats during a football game, and I'm not so sure 33 motivated Irish is not going to be able to at least put a fantastic battle against that Clemson team that's loaded with future NFL stars.
I like it. You know them both. You played them both. One last thought. As a result of the success that you've had there, you signed an extension that's going to keep you at Syracuse, quote, well into the future. Dino, so what did the extension mean to you, and what's it say about the future of Syracuse football?
Well, first of all, it's a good feeling to know that the community and the student body believes in what we're trying to do. We're trying to do it the right way. We're trying to do it a way that everybody can be proud of. And it's nice to be reinforced that they believe in the vision that you see. And then the second thing is that I'm a rebuilder. I like rebuilding things. But when I rebuild it, I don't want it torn down. And I want to rebuild this thing so it lasts. So we're doing it the right way. We're not trying to do the quick fix. It's not one of those deals where you build a building and in comes a hurricane and it's the first building that's lift off its foundations and it's halfway across the lake. That's not how we're building this thing. I want to build it to last. So if the hurricane's taking every house, it's the last house that comes off its foundation because it was so well built. So we'll see. That's our goal. That's my vision. And hopefully it'll work out.
Syracuse, 9-3. They're number 17 in the AP on the coaches' poll, and a tremendous opportunity in the Camping World Bowl. It's December 28th, Syracuse against West Virginia. The head coach of the Orange and a friend of the program, Dino Babers, my guest. Dino, great to have you on. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. Good luck in that one, and it's always good to have you on this show.
Now, Jim, happy holidays to you. Let me say that, but you hurt me earlier in this conversation. Because I asked you, you know, I'm a Southern California guy. I asked you what the temperature was, and you just said it was nice. What's the temperature, Jim? I'm a military kid.
I got you.
Give me a number.
Let me check it. I'm going to check it for you right now. It is 59 degrees, Dino. 59 degrees.
54, Jim. You only got us by 5.
I know. You believe that? 59 degrees. Man, Syracuse is where it's at. Man, you were so right. And forgive me for not answering a direct question with a nice answer. Next time I got you, Coach. Good
All
to have
right,
you
Jim.
Back. All right,
you have a happy
week.
Holidays, brother.
You too,
hey,
Dino.
Put
yep.
the wetsuit on and go surfing, Jim.
You know it. You know it. Man up. Wesley Woodyard is my guest. Wesley, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How about you?
Wesley,
jungle?
Great. It's great in the jungle. Great to have you back. Always good to talk to you. So let me start here. You went into the Giants' house on Sunday knowing that you had to win to keep your playoff hopes alive, and then you come out with a 17-0 win. That was the team's first shutout since 2000. So as a defense, how much pride do you take in that performance?
Man, it's something that, you know, I know since I've been here since 2015, we've been trying to fight to get that shutout. Finally, you know, some things went our way. We got one in the books, and you know, we didn't even know it was an 18-year streak until somebody told us after the game. But it was exciting, man, to finally get that full four-quarter defensive dominant performance, and that's what we gave them.
Now, you made the point that the defensive performance was a group effort. Another group effort was that Remember the Titans celebration on Sunday. Wesley, leader that you are, you seem to be leading the way on that one. How did that come about, and then how pleased were you with the way that came out?
Man, it was cool, man. We actually did like a little fake dry run in warm-ups last week. I think it was like on Monday. We had an extra day of practice, and we were doing it. Some guys were climbing around, and you know, we got in the game. Like I heard somebody say behind me, if I get an interception, we're doing a Remember the Titans dance, don't forget. So we ended up getting off the field on fourth down. It was a turnover, and, you know, we coordinated. I was like, hey, we said we was going to do it. Let's do it. And, you know, man, the rest is history. It was a kind of cool concept and cool celebration. And we made fun of some of the guys that didn't know too much about his dad.
That was a cool concept. Wesley Woodyard joining us. So Saquon Barkley had come into that game with four straight 100-yard games. He had 170 against Washington the week before. You held him to 31 yards on 14 rushes. How satisfying is it when you completely shut down a guy that good? And could you see him getting frustrated as the game wore on?
Oh, yeah. Man, you know what? All week, that's what we heard. Saquon is Saquon that. You know, we took it as a challenge as a defense to be like, hey, at the end of the day, we want to give the rest of the NFL something to watch on how to attack and how to stop Saquon. And that was something that we did, man. We went out there. We were like, hey, we're going to lock this guy out. He's not going to beat us. And once you see your team running back, and Derrick Henry in our case, taking over the game, you know, balling out, making physical runs as a defensive unit, you're on the sideline like, hey, this is D. Hen's day. So we're getting amped up. The more and more success we have and the more and more our offense feeds off on it, it makes it a lot easier to go out there and stop a running back like Saquon.
Wesley Woodyard joining us. You're right. And when you see your guy doing what he was doing, Derrick Henry, over 400 rushing yards in the last two games, you can see where that defense, your defense, was feeding on that. You know, you look at the win over the Giants. You had said that the playoffs came a month early for this team. It was not that long ago that you guys were 5-6. It looked like the season was hanging in the balance. Now you've won three straight. You've got a chance to make it four straight on Saturday. So what changed for this team?
You know, it's all about a winning mentality, you know, win and get in, you know, take care of your business. And the whole concept of, you know, being in the playoffs came earlier. All the scenarios that happens, if this, if that, it doesn't mean anything if you don't win. So that's something that as a whole group, you know, we realize, hey, we put ourselves in this predicament. So the only way to get out of it is to control what you can control. And that's going out there by making great plays and winning.
You know, I'm curious about this. It's late December. Every single game now is the biggest game of the year, but you're biggest playing game on a Saturday, right? So they're all big, but Saturday's a short week. So how do you go about preparing your body and your mind for the biggest game of the season on a short week?
You know, you really got to dial in to, you know, your regimen and your routine during the week. Like, as soon as I get out the phone call, I'm getting ready to head to get my weekly massage. And you know, you just have to stay on those little things, because those knick-knack injuries can creep up on you. And if you don't stay on top of them, you'll find yourself being sidelined come Saturday or on a short week. So you just really have to be a true professional. You got to be a true professional every week, and especially on those short weeks.
You know, Wesley, I wonder, you come into the league and you were undrafted. I would argue that you've more than proven yourself over the course of your career time and time again. So does the chip on your shoulder get smaller or maybe even vanish, or is it still there every single year?
Jim, you know that baby there. You know it's there. It's there every time I step on the field. I sit there and I just remember the times that, hey, you begged, you wanted, you worked your tail off to get into this situation. I begged God to give me an opportunity to let me play this game. So, man, that chip is going to stay on my shoulder until, you know, my last time running out of that tunnel, man. So I'm going to be a competitive, fired-up guy. You better bet. Whenever I'm on the field, I'm trying to kick your butt.
Wesley Woodyard joining us. You know, that's amazing. When you talk about how you just beg for the opportunity, anything for an opportunity. And now look, Dean Pease, who's your defense coordinator, worked with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed in Baltimore. He compared you to the way they played, in that you're playing smarter as you get older. What's your reaction when you hear that comparison to Ray Lewis and Ed Reed?
Man, I grew up a Ray Lewis fan. I remember watching, you know, Ed Reed in college. My brother would be running into the room, turning my cartoons off and putting the University of Miami on and watching Ed make plays. And to be compared to guys like that, man, you know, it means a lot. And to come from Dean, a guy that's coached my favorite linebacker, and I get a chance to pick his brains, and he tells stories about Ray did this and Ray saw things in this defense, man, it means a lot to me, because I'm touching greatness. You know, I'm working with a great D coordinator that worked with some of the best defensive players that ever came across the NFL. And like I said, man, I get to rub elbows with greatness, and I'm just, trying to learn and soak up as much information as I can from him.
Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard joining me for a few more moments. Now, before Sunday's game, when you were in the tunnel, you and Jarrell Casey were having a little conversation, and he actually said, he said, "I lead, you follow." You told him, "I lead, you follow." I know you're chuckling and it was good natured, but did you feel like maybe it was important to let him know the leadership structure of the organization?
Hey, I have to let him know every week. Hey, Chase, you better follow because I'm leading. I'm trying to make every play. And I tell you what, man, me and Case, we're probably some of the biggest jerks on game day because we let our teammates know, like, hey, I'm making all the plays. Case making all the plays. And, you know, we get so amped up and competitive, man. Me and Case get to joking and be like, hey, we got more. Jarrell Casey and Wesley Woodyard has more combined tackles than some of you guys have tackles on the year. So, you know, man, it's all fun and games, man. I love my brother Jarrell, and every week that's our motto, man. We lead and our team will follow, and that's why we're the captains, and that's why Jarrell is a Pro Bowler and one of the best linemen in the defensive game because that's his mentality. He doesn't depend on guys going out there making 10 tackles. He's the kind of guy that, hey, I'm going out there to make 3 sacks, and you guys follow my lead. And that's how it goes, and that's how it should be.
Hey, listen, it's fun and games, but when it comes to leadership, that's no joke. I know you take that very seriously.
Not at all.
You know, Wesley, you and I have talked about that for a long, long time, and it's an area where you, to me, you're truly gifted. So let me ask you, how much of your leadership ability is learned, and how much of it is something that you think maybe you were just born with and hardwired with?
You know, it really is. It's kind of like working your craft. I can say being an undrafted free agent, my leadership skills have been tested every year. And that's for a good thing because I've been put in so many different situations to now I know how to handle different situations and I can give guys advice on, hey, this is how the game goes. This is the NFL. It's not just about you're not going to get by pure love. This is a true business. And, you know, man, I've been blessed, man, to be in the locker room to receive great words of encouragement from guys like Champ Bailey, Brian Dawkins. And now I'm the older guy that some of these young guys look to me to, you know, they're having a hard day. And guess what? They're looking to me to pull them through the day. So, man, I embrace it and I enjoy it and I love it. And like I said, being an undrafted guy, you got to come to work every day. And it's really helped my leadership ability because undrafted, you can't depend on your talents to make you through. You have to do other things and be great in other areas besides football just to make it in the NFL.
Wesley, you just mentioned two of my favorite guys ever, Champ Bailey and Brian Dawkins. Like, Doc, what was Doc like? How did he lead? Did he lead with words or physicality or both?
Man, you know, he definitely led with words and physicality. And Doc would be the kind of guy that, more importantly, he didn't necessarily had to say anything. You just knew to follow him. Like, hey, this is the right steps that any and every NFL player should be taking. So let's get in line with Doc. He's doing the right things. He knows what it takes to be a good leader, but when he said something, his words stood and meant more than any kind of physical threat that a coach can give you or a player can give you. Because when Champ Bailey and Brian Dawkins said something, their word was bigger than anything else, and they usually and more than likely came through with their word.
So last stop before you go, what was it like Doc, when he had a big hit, like a kill shot, the kind of impact that would have not only on the team, the sideline, but the entire stadium? What was that like?
I'm telling you, I've never been on the field with anybody and that player hit somebody and I get chills going down my spine because it's just like when B-Doc hit somebody, it's like you can feel it. And you, like, I used to rush just to get a part of his excitement and celebration sort of rub off on me. So B-Doc could smack somebody and he give you one of them, oh yeah, got Dawkins, come on Jack, come on baby. And you get next to that, I just get chills, man. Chills run down my spine, man. And I'm hyped right now just thinking about it. So I'm just been blessed, man, to have a guy like that, man, that I could just mold some of my game around.
My man, he was the 2017 recipient of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, a 3-time nominee in Denver as well, playing the game at an extremely high level still yet, and Tennessee right there in the hunt. They've got a Saturday game at home against Washington. Wesley, you know I appreciate you. You are Jungle fam.
Anytime.
I always look forward to it, man. Thank you so much, Wesley.
Tighten up, Jim, man. Talk to you later.
It was great seeing Mike in Buffalo make the leap from email to the phones. You might want to stick with the emails, brother. Either that or have someone other than Matt in Vancouver write your material. Now before he skips town, a few of us are taking Kyle in Green Bay out for wings tonight. If you grow a pair between now and then, give me a call and I'll pick you up. And Jim, I want to congratulate Mark in Hollywood on hitting the jungle milestone. During yesterday's pathetic call, he reset his Chris Hansen joke for the 25th time. Happy silver anniversary, big guy. And a Mark in Hollywood call is never complete without calling someone a racist or a drug addict. I realize all wannabe actors save their scripts, but you go next level with it, Miniature Man. Maybe it's time to reconnect with your boy, Dick Flowers. You two losers can program Alexa with a Chris Hansen voice and perform another smack-off skit, you hack. And the reason people like me delete tweets is because bitches like you report tweets. Fighting on Twitter's my only hobby, and you couldn't handle being my latest victim. Just another side effect of little man syndrome. And Mark coming after me for the Buffalo Clone happy hour was so friggin' good. The guy who threw a smack-off party at a place called Big Wang's, no less, is calling me out for a clone stock. Not my fault. The only ones who showed up for your event were the 10-year-olds from your acting class. Start hanging out with adults, and maybe you'll get a following. And lastly, Jim, I had to laugh when Mark said my wife had a fetish for 5'1" altar boys. The only ones with a fetish for 5'1" altar boys are priests. Which is exactly why you're looking forward to your Christmas pageant so much. Thanks for another great year, Jim. 2019's going to be my angriest one ever. I'm out.
Rick in Buffalo. Rack him. Dr. Dave. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, what's up? DJ DeLauro, play my hit. Blair.
What hit?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that color.
I don't like that color.
All right, Dave.
Not a very good color.
All right, Dave. All right, Dave. Generally, I do not do requests. I'm not Casey Kasem. Generally, I do not do requests. But because it is Christmas and I'm soliciting phone calls, I will take care of this. Alvin, go ahead and do it.
Jim, how's it going?
Good, good. What's up?
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Still good. What's up?
Oh, sorry, Jim. Oh, sorry, Jim.
Wait for it. Here comes the good part.
Oh, sorry, Jim.
What did I tell you? Get it, Dave. Get it, kook.
Substantial community guide.
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Oh, sorry, Jim.
I'm done.
Let's do it. Let's go to Indy. Ryan in Indy. Good to have you, Ryan. How are you?
Jim Rome Show. Love the Groose Reset. Just had to say hello that way. Jim, it is an honor and a pleasure. I would say first time, long time, but actually back in the day, Jay Stu stonewalled me. So it went like this. I called in during the Peyton Manning era to say that Peyton relied on the stretch run and the bubble screen too much, and he got way too conservative at times. And Jay Stu says, you sound like a knowledgeable caller. I need you to call back and, I don't know, sex it up a bit. Maybe, you know, just add something more. Thanks. Click. And I wasn't pissed. I just was laughing. I'm like, the wooden laconic one just told me to sex it up a bit. I mean, how rich was that? I mean, it totally didn't piss me off. It just made me sit and laugh for about a half an hour. So I have to totally agree with Mark. Rick and Buffalo is nothing more than Jeff and Richmond Reset. And yeah, it's his voice and everything. But dude, if you had more of an original, your own voice, we would actually listen to what you say. But Jim, can you imagine him if he, you know, I used to be a teacher. My wife's a teacher. You imagine him in today's boardroom coming in. Everyone, I have a new marketing plan for first quarter.
I'm going to smoke a box of heaters and make cold calls on the phone. I think it'll go over well. I mean, who does that in the room?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that. Hey, Ryan.
I don't like that call.
Hey, Ryan, why don't you sex it up a little bit? That Peyton Manning take was 10 times as good as the one you just had, and that couldn't get you on the air back in the day. Stu was right. Come on, man. Sex it up a bit.
Keep calling, weaklings.
There were a few people in San Diego at the Mission Valley appearance this past weekend that said to Hawk, hey, Hawk, it's a good thing you work there now. I could never get through. Stu would never let me on the air. And you let everybody on the air, Hawk. What's going on with that? Hey, Ryan, do me a favor, man. I don't know how long it's been since you last called. Take that time and quadruple that. And then when you hit that point in time, you know, 25 years from now, ask yourself again if it's something you really want to do. And then tell yourself, no, it's not.
Jim Rome Show.
1-800-636-8686. Speaking of Hawk letting anybody and everybody through, let's go to Parody Larry. Merry Christmas, Lawrence.
Rome, I want to wish you and the entire Jungle family a wonderful holiday season. With a sincere shout-out to Trapper for a very happy and healthy new year. So just for you, here's my special Christmas parody. In 2018, the clones all got to see 12 Woods Awesome Scoping, Kelly's Flight Deck Forehead, 10 Denless Females, Brad wins the smack-off, 8 seeds for the hack-off, 7 more kids for Alvy, Rex's 6 launch angles, 5 golden tickets. 4 run calls from Josh, Hawk's porn stash, Romy's hard takes, and the show made it onto TV.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
2 calls through, 2 guys get run. Can we make it 3? 1-800-636-8686. Last segment of the last regular show. We're 2 for 2. Let's go to Los Angeles. Fabian, what's going on?
Nothing much, amigo. Just thought I'd sneak in. You know, it's easy. Just pay Hawk a few bucks and he'll let you through. Just a little tip for the clones. Hey, bro, I would like to wish all of you, the JTP, a merry, happy Christmas. Happy New Year. And hopefully next year it'll be better than this year. But this year was awesome. The best. You made my Christmas, Rome. Everyone, hey, I'm a translator, right? But hey, misbehave, okay? And take very good care of yourself, okay? Señor de los cielos, eh? Pórtense mal y cuídense bien. I'm out, homie.
Fabian made it to the end of his phone call. Neep! Remember, he was in Mission Valley. You notice he didn't get run. He snapped my streak of 2 run calls in a row. Listen, can you see what we're doing here? We're banging telephone calls. I've taken 3 calls in 1 segment. I normally don't take 3 in 1 show. Let's keep going. Call me now. You can get right through and right up on the air. North Carolina, Trey. Hey, Trey, how are you?
Man, I'm doing awesome, Jim. I just want to wish you and all your boys a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. So proud of you for being on the air for 30 years plus. And just stoked about your Pat Tillman speech. And I had an idea for you.
Talk to me.
How about Jimmy the Roman on NFL Today? 1 segment. Maybe Bill Cowher asked you, what you think about the Steelers versus the Saints or any game. It doesn't matter. But you have to give it to him like the Greek gave it to him. Just short of a touchdown or maybe a point more than a field goal. What do you think, man?
Whoa, Alvy.
I don't like that call.
Hey, Trey, sorry about that. I mean, I don't want to undermine Alvin's hammer or authority. He's got the autonomy to do so. Here's the thing. Essentially on the NFL on CBS, and thank you for watching, and thanks for being proud of me for being on the air for 30 years. The thing about the NFL on CBS, I don't tell them what to do. They tell me what to do. Drew Kalisky kind of tells me what he would like from me. Now, I will say this. Drew is awesome about, hey, Jim, is there something you want to hit on? Is there something you want to rant on? Is there something you feel strongly about? But generally the way this works, and Drew, Drew's process is amazing. Drew is one of the greatest producers I've ever worked with, because on those weeks where I appear on the NFL on CBS, like clockwork, on Monday morning, Drew will say, he sends me an email, "Good morning, Jim. Hope you're doing well. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend. Here are four things that I'd like you to focus on." And then we'll touch base later in the week. And it's kind of implied that if there's something that I want to pitch him, he's all ears. And he'll let me know, that works, do that, or now we got that covered, or no, we don't need that. So that's kind of how the process goes. I can't just go into the production meeting and say, "Hey, Bill Cowher, why don't you start asking me questions?" I don't know. Bill Cowher was like an amazing NFL coach. I don't think he really cares what I have to say. Let's keep moving. 1-800-636-8686. I think this guy's name came up earlier today. I think Tyler in Shredmonton mentioned him. Benny in Wisco. It's been a minute or two. Hey, Ben, how are you?
What's that? I've been listening to Mark and Rick's calls for hours and throwing up for hours. So let me get this straight. Silk and Rick in Buffalo are teachers. What's next? You're going to tell me that that caller Dave in Chicago is a doctor and Mark in Hollywood is an actor? What is Tyler in Edmonton, a voice coach? Dude's voice has more cracks than Henry Hill's cheeks. Tyler, thanks for thinking of me this holiday season with that very clever two-seater Peloton joke. But where the hell am I going to sit? Anyway, to you and your family and your crew and Hawk, wore IRA using a gumball machine as a parking meter. Happy New Year, dude.
Good job, Benny. Good job, Benny. Where you been? Call more, Benny. In 2019, New Year's resolution, Benny, call the jungle more often. Nice job. Got to go to Beaks. Look at Beaks in Studio City, 818 for life. Beaks, I can't believe you're calling. What's up, man?
Chilling. Listen, Mark better be careful, because it sounds like Rick might end up road raging with Mark locked in the back of his trunk come smack off. Good Lord, man. Take it easy, Rick. This brings me to this idea. I know 1 minute it's hot over there and 1 minute it's cold, so I have a solution for your office temperature issue. For once in his life, Clam in Denver has a use. You've seen this nitwit's picture, right? So instead of shaving a Yeti's ass and gluing it to his stupid face, I suggest he gets to work and knocks out some Yeti ass hair winter gear for the XR4 TI crew. Stack. Unwore the IV bag filled with scotch that Neil in Cleveland plugs in before every Woodscope session, and wore Dan being the result of truck stop hooker bum sex. Merry Christmas, Sloans. I'm out.
Did you just say that Dan in Denver was the result of truck stop hooker bum sex?
Fat.
Good night now.